You've seen the picture. It's all over the internet. It shows the First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama. She's not looking happy, as she normally does in her photograph. She's looking very sad. She's sad because she has a picture, a sign in front of her saying, "Bring back our girls." The girls in question are Nigerian, and they've been abducted. They've been kidnapped by a group called Boko Haram. Some of them, I'm happy to say, have escaped, and a few of them have made their way to the United States, and today we're going to speak to one of them. It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and today it's about being kidnapped by Boko Haram.
Welcome to your Weekly Constitutional, hosted by Professor Stuart Harris and produced in partnership with the Robert H. Smith Center for the Constitution at James Madison's historic home, Montpelier.
Have you ever wondered what it would be like to live in a place, to be governed by people who don't share American ideals of religious freedom? Well, you don't really have to wonder. There are lots of examples of theocracies around the world. And one of the most terrible examples of a group that wants to impose a theocracy is Boko Haram, an extreme Islamic group in northeastern Nigeria, which, among other terrible things, has kidnapped hundreds of teenage girls and apparently done horrible things to them, prompting the First Lady of the United States and many others to start the Bring Back Our Girls campaign, which I'm sorry to say has not been highly successful yet. But there have been a few glimmers of hope. A few of these girls have escaped, and I'm happy to say that some of them have made their way to the United States, and that I had the privilege recently of speaking to one of them. Now, I'm going to be circumspect here because I don't want to mention the girl's name or any of the other identifying information. I certainly don't want to talk about her family because some of her family is still back in Nigeria. So at the risk of a little bit of cultural insensitivity, I will give her an American-sounding name. I'll simply refer to her as Jane.
So you're from Nigeria?
Yes.
And your very sweetness and happiness, and as Wanda and I were just talking about, your remarkable glowing beauty, all belie the fact that you've gone through this terrible, terrible circumstance. And in other words, you look like a happy, well-adjusted teenage girl who could be from anywhere.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome. That's very, very impressive, and I'm very, very pleased to finally have a chance to sit down with you and speak about your experiences. Let's go back, if we can, to long before that terrible incident where you were kidnapped and escaped from Boko Haram. And let's go back all the way to the beginning of your life, if we may. Where were you born?
I was born in northern Nigeria.
Now, this is the point in most of my interviews where I will allow invite my guests to tell us more about their background. And Jane, as I'm calling her, did tell me a lot about her background, but this is one of those things we have to cut. You also heard her mention, or me mention, a woman named Wanda. Wanda is one of the people who's helping Jane adjust to the United States. I asked Jane next where she was when she was abducted by Boko Haram.
It's Government Secondary School, Chibok.
Okay, Chibok. Yeah. And that's a name a lot of people have heard.
Yes.
All right, and tell me about that school before the attack.
Okay. Before, I went to that school not long ago. It was May 2013.
Right.
And the school was good. It was peaceful with my friends. We talked like the place was peaceful before.
Mm-hmm.
But
was it just for girls or was it girls and boys?
It's girls and boys, but the boys are boarding student. Day student. It's only girls that are day boarding student.
Okay.
Yeah.
You have some people who stay there and some people who come in and stay students. Okay.
Yes.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And did you like it?
Yeah, I like it. It was good. And like 50% of the school are Christian, and so the majority of the students are Christian, and we love each other. I love the school.
And what were the other students?
Some of them are Muslim, but not majority of the students are Muslim.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's a mixed school where you're practicing religious tolerance, it sounds like. Is that a fair statement? Everyone got along and there was...
Since we are just children, like, we don't know what the difference is, like maybe about the religions. We know that there are some differences between Christian and Muslim, but because we are just a little kid, like we're just a children, so we don't show that differences between us, but we all get along and talk with each other and share with each other.
Were any of your friends among the Muslim students?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so you have both Christian and Muslim friends. So everything goes well from 2013 to the beginning of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have a sense that there were any problems in the country? Had you heard of Boko Haram? Were you concerned about it?
Oh, yeah. Because the reason why I left my first boarding school was because of the Boko Haram issue.
Oh, so, I didn't realize that.
Yes.
Please tell me about that.
Okay. So I went to that school. It was just a girls' boarding school, and the school was like a mile out of the country, out of the town.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Boko Haram came into the town, like they were shooting guns and killing people, yelling, and we just like get out of the window and climb the wall and go out and just run and find our way from there and go home. So by then, there's no way you can go to that town and go to school again. So that's when I went back to Chibok.
So you had already run away from Boko Haram once.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I went to Chibok because Chibok is safe, because they have never had anything like Boko Haram there. So I went there to finish my high school. That's when the Boko Haram came and attacked the school.
Good heavens. And if I understood you correctly, you had to climb out of the windows of your school?
Yeah.
While they were shooting it up?
Mm-hmm. Like they were in the country, but they're not coming to the school. But because we are like far from the town,
mm-hmm,
and the shooting gun, so we have to, you know, run away and find our way and go before they came to the school by then.
Well, that's one of the better reasons I've ever heard for changing schools.
Mm-hmm.
So my goodness, so you were very much aware of Boko Haram.
Mm-hmm.
And then so then you came to Chibok.
Yes.
In 2013, and then everything was okay for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any warning that there was going to be another attack coming?
No. It's just one day, it's like in the evening. That one is not the Boko Haram, but it's like the security that used to stay there, you know, and they were shooting guns because they're going to go to other place and other people are coming. So like they're celebrating whatever, they live in the town. So they're shooting guns, and then we just got scared, and some of the girls ran away and they even got injured. So that's when the teachers warned us that if something like that happens again, we should not run away. So.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
So there was an incident where some of the security people around the school,
mm-hmm,
were getting rowdy with their guns.
Yes.
Some people got hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Then the people who got hurt while they were running away.
Mm-hmm.
And so then the school said, if something like this happens again, stay here.
Yeah.
Ooh, ouch, I see where this is going. Okay, so when was that actually? When did that happen?
It was like, when I get there, it's maybe a month, like some few months before the Boko Haram came and attacked.
Okay, so now you had your orders. If something like that happens again, stay here.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, please tell me about the day of the attack. How did that day begin?
Okay. The day was pretty good because I was not even at school that day. Like, I went to see my aunt in the Chibok town. So, and like, I stayed with her for a few days because we don't have... because we're writing our final exam, so there's some interval between days. Today we don't have papers, then tomorrow we'll write papers. So because I have like 2 or 3 days, then I went to see my aunt, and I came back to school that day like around 5 o'clock, and I went in and I cooked some food and we eat with my friends and we just sitting talking and we start reading, getting ready for exam next day on Tuesday. That's 15th of April.
This is the 14th of April, 2015.
Yeah,
okay.
2014.
Excuse me, 2014.
Yes.
April 15, 2014. And it's 5 o'clock in the evening and you're there cooking. Okay, and then you're getting ready for your finals the next day.
Yes.
Okay.
So when we finish eating the food I cook and we're reading, so it's time to go to bed, like 11. So we start sleeping. Some of us are asleep. Some of us, like, they did not sleep yet. So by then we heard the Boko Haram are shooting guns in the Chibok town, and they were yelling.
Did you know it was Boko Haram?
Yes. Because whenever they attack towns, they used to shout, Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar. So when they do that, oh, everybody knows that they were the Boko Haram.
Oh, that's the expression, means God is great, right?
And the sound of their guns are different from the military's gun, the way they shoot it, and the sounds are different. So, like, whenever they came and attacked, people knows that these are not the security, but they're the Boko Haram.
Boy. How did people react to that? How did you and your friends react?
And so when we heard the gunshot, because our teachers told us not to run away, like if we heard something like that, and they live not far from us. And so we just wake up and came out of our rooms and just like gathered ourselves together and waiting for the teachers to come and tell us what to do. So, and by then, we didn't even know that the Boko Haram came and went to the place where our teachers are living. And before they got there, they found nobody. All of our teachers, they have run away.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Ouch. So I guess they had some sort of warning that this was going to happen.
I don't know. But they didn't get anybody over there. So they took the motorcycles of our teachers from there and came to the hostel where we're staying with the motorcycle. So when we heard the sound of the motorcycles, because their teachers, they live around us, we know like some of the sound of their motorcycles. So when they came in, some of them with the military uniforms, they have guns. So we all thought that it's our teachers and the militaries that came to tell us what to do or to rescue us. Well, when they just came in and they said, they yelled at us and they said, all of you come together, like we should just gather ourselves together, and we are thinking that they're the securities. So like we all came together and they start going to the rooms, checking if there's someone hiding inside or whatever. And after they finished checking and they just came out, and some of them are at the class areas. There were just a lot of them like around us and with the guns by then.
So they've gathered you up. Is this sort of in a courtyard area? Mm-hmm. A central courtyard area?
Yeah.
They've checked all the buildings. Was anybody hiding? Did they find anybody in there?
Mm-mm.
And so how many girls are gathered in the courtyard?
Actually, I don't know the final, like the final amount of the girls, mm-hmm. but we are like 280 something.
And what was the age range?
16, 17, 18.
Okay, so basically older teenage girls.
Yes. We are all high school girls.
All high school girls.
Yes.
Okay, so they've got you gathered there. They've mm-hmm. checked the buildings.
Yeah.
What happens next?
And by then one of them started explaining for us that they were the Boko Haram. And he now tells us that we have heard what is happening all over around the world about Boko Haram, and they're here with us today. So whatever they ask us to do, if we didn't do it, then they're going to shoot all of us. So, and the first question they ask is, where are the guys? And we told them that the guys are this student, they're not a burden student. And they said, okay. And they asked for a cement block print machine. And I didn't even know, we didn't know anything about that.
A cement block?
Yeah. Cement block print machine. The machine, that's what they're looking for.
The mission?
Yeah. Machine.
Machine.
Oh, okay. A cement block machine?
Yes.
Okay. And what kind of machine was this? They were would that make
we
cement
have no
blocks?
No idea. Yeah, they made the cement block with it, but
oh, okay.
We
they
have
wanted
no idea about
they
it.
Thought that you had some sort of machine that was going to help them make cement blocks.
Maybe.
Okay. Well, yeah. Apparently there was none.
Mhm.
It's Weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and this week I'm speaking to a 19-year-old, a young woman. I was calling her a girl, but she's a young woman now. I'm giving her the pseudonym Jane, because you see, she's one of the very few young women who have escaped from that extremist group Boko Haram that operates an extreme brand of Islam in northeastern Nigeria. And to protect her and to protect the institution where she is, I'm using a pseudonym. After the break, we'll continue our discussion with Jane.
trail of destruction across northern Nigeria, meeting lackluster opposition from the country's armed forces. The Islamist group has pledged allegiance to the Islamic State, and at its height,
Boko Haram is proving its strength in West Africa. That's the group, of course, that is notorious now for kidnapping hundreds of schoolgirls yet to be found, we should mention. Now they've captured a heavily guarded military base.
New developments this morning in the kidnapping of nearly 300 schoolgirls in Nigeria. The leader of the militant Islamist group responsible for their abduction appeared in a new video. As Deborah Pata reports, he's mocking the international campaign to free.
Over the past year, a number of these victims have managed to escape, meaning we now have a glimpse into what living as a captive of Boko Haram is really like. The first thing to note is that the vast majority of Boko Haram's captives are female. This is important because Boko Haram is a Muslim extremist group, and as such, their goal is to establish an extremely antiquated and strict version of Sharia law.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking to a young woman, a 19-year-old woman from Nigeria, and I'm calling her Jane to protect her identity and the identity of the place that's harboring her. You see, Jane escaped from Boko Haram, that extreme Islamist group in northeastern Nigeria, and made her way to the United States, where she's sitting down today and talking to me about her experience being kidnapped and escaping from Boko Haram.
Could you describe them to me? I mean, what did they look like, other than you said some of them had military uniforms?
Yeah, like some of them had military uniform. Well, some of them has like a just a shirt and just a pant, like just normal people.
How old were these?
I don't know.
Did they look like teenagers?
They looked
or
like
old
younger
men?
People, like maybe 22, 23, and 19, and other like that, yeah.
So these are men, all men?
All men.
And they're a few years older than you girls are?
Mm-hmm.
So you guys were from 16 to 18, and they were from 19 up into their 20s?
Yes.
At some point?
Yeah.
Okay, did they... Obviously, they're not acting in a nice fashion. Did they, how else would you describe them? Did they seem like they were under control, or were they enraged, or were they laughing? What was their demeanor? What, how did they act?
Well, they're not laughing. Like, if they're talking to us, they yell at us because maybe they're doing that, that we should get scared. Or if they tell us something and nobody responds to them, like they'll just shoot a gun and, you know, we'll all get scared and some people will talk to them. And when they talk to themselves, they talk in a different language that we didn't even know how to speak it. But if they will speak to us, then they'll speak with the Hausa. That's the general language we speak there, so like we know what they're saying. But if they're speaking to themselves, they speak in that different language.
So they're from a region up in northeastern Nigeria that has its own language.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, did you actually speak to them yourself?
Mm-mm.
You were one of the people who stayed back. Probably a wise move.
Mm-hmm. So they just point out two girls among us to go and show them where our food are kept. So, and the girls just went with some of them, without even knowing that they brought a truck into the school and went to the store and packed all the food and pack whatever they want and start burning whatever they don't want it. And they told us to move out from the hostel to the class area. And they said we should not run, we should not yell. If we do, they're going to shoot all of us. So they're like around us and somebody was leading us in the front and some of them are at the back and we just followed them to the class area. And they start burning our like books, our clothes, and everything in the hostel. And after they finished burning that and they came to the class area and started burning the class areas, like all of the office, the everything, and they just burned everything.
How many of them were there?
I really don't know.
Okay.
A lot of them.
There were a lot of them, yeah, because there were a lot of
girls.
Some
of them are at school. Well, some of them are in the town burning like some shops, packing food, and the other stuff in the Chibok town. So there are lots of them.
Lots of them around.
Mm-hmm.
Did any of the girls try to run away at that point?
Mm-mm.
No, nobody tried to escape at that point. Now, you mentioned they were burning all of your books and burning your school. I don't know much about Boko Haram. But what I've read indicates that one of their major concerns is what they call Western education or false education. Mm-hmm. Was there something like that going on? Were they talking about the education you had received and how bad it was, and that's why they were burning the books, or did they just burn?
They didn't say anything like about the books they burned, but they're just telling us that they were just like maybe making like messing with us. They're just saying, why are you guys here? You're here to learn. Why can't you go and get married? Like, that's what they're telling us. Like, why are you guys here? You think that you're doing something good for your life? You're here to learn. And so, like, when they're talking to us, we didn't even respond and say yes or no to them because, like, we're scared. And they just kept talking and we just kept quiet. So when we're thinking maybe if they finish burning everything, they would tell us to go home, because it happens like in Yadi Buni or wherever, and the school was mixed with boys and girls. So when they attacked that school, like, they slaughtered all the guys and told the girls to go and get married. I heard about that story before. So
let me just be clear on that. So there had been an earlier attack, mm-hmm, on a school with both boys and girls.
Yes.
And they killed all the boys. Mm-hmm. And told the girls to go home,
yeah,
and get married.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they don't like education, and they especially don't like girls getting educated.
Yeah.
But at least they just sent them home.
Mm-hmm.
At least the girls, that
yes.
is. And that's what you all thought might happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
They would just send you home after they'd burned your school down.
Yeah.
Was there any specific brutality at this time? Did they attack any of the girls? Did they hit any of the girls?
Mm-hmm.
There was nothing. No. They just yelled, and the girls did what they said. And so at that point, there had been no real violence.
Yes.
Other than the property damage.
Yeah.
Okay. So what happened next?
Okay. So after they finished burning everything at the school, so they told us to move out from the school premises and follow them. So we just followed them to a small place. You know, Chibok is like around, they have bushes, they have farms and some forest like around them. So, and they move us out and gather us under a big tree by then. So they have like, they move all of their cars and park under that tree with the food and everything. So when they gather us under that tree, they told us to say our last prayer. So we're all scared and we're thinking that they're going to kill us. Since they moved out from the school, they didn't tell us to go home. So we're all scared, and some of us start crying and they're talking to themselves. And so they decided among them maybe not to kill us. So, and they yell at us, shooting guns, and they said they brought a smoker and parked under the big truck, is a long, so, and they said, okay, if you want to die, if you don't want to go with us, you should come out and say that you don't want to go, and they're going to shoot you. But if you want your life, then you have to claim that small car and enter the truck.
Claim that what? That's
a small car that they park under the truck, because the truck was long, so we can't claim and enter the truck. So they have to bring the small car under the truck.
Oh, I see. You're using it as a step.
Yes.
So they had a big, tall truck there,
mm-hmm,
and they brought a smaller car.
Look, yeah.
I didn't understand you.
Okay.
And they said, this is your choice. Either,
mm-hmm,
you come with us by climbing up this car and into the truck.
Yes.
Or say you don't want to come, and that's fine, and then,
mm-hmm,
we'll kill you.
Yeah.
My. Then you said they were debating this among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Did it seem to you they had not planned this out beforehand? I mean, were they really?
That's what I'm thinking. Like, they didn't even plan. Maybe they didn't plan about taking all the girls, or I'm not sure if they planned it. Because, like they said, we should say our last prayer. So maybe they want to kill us. Well, they decide among themselves when they're talking in other language that, no, we should not kill them. Let's just go with them. I don't know.
My. Did anyone choose not to go?
Mm-mm.
Well, that's pretty understandable. So you were going to bed, so you're all just dressed in your pajamas here.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I hope it wasn't cold or anything out.
Mm-mm,
okay.
It wasn't cold.
Okay, so at least you weren't getting cold out in your night clothes. Okay, but so you all started climbing up into the back of the truck.
Yes.
And when was the truck big enough for 200 girls?
Mm-mm,
okay.
It's not. So when we entered the truck, I was in the truck while a lot of girls remained outside. And they said the girls should walk on their foot, like they should walk and follow us. So I'm in the truck and we are going. So we entered a small village after you pass Chibok. Mm-hmm. So by then, and they told the other girls that the journey was too long, so they have to try and get into the truck. So the truck was not big enough. So they have like small cars with them, and they brought like other cars because they have like a lot of cars. So they put the girls in the cars and three girls remain outside. No more space for them to get into the truck because like the other people are sitting on others' leg in the truck. There's no more space. And so they ask the girls that remain outside if they are Christian or Muslim. One of them, she's Muslim, and two of them are Christian. So he asked, it's one of them that asked them. So he asked the first one, and she said that she's a Muslim, and she's Muslim. And she asked, he asked the second one, and she said that she's a Muslim too, while she's a Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked the third one, and she said that she's a Christian. So he decided that they should kill her and let the two girls that said that they're Muslim to go home. Well, because they didn't used to kill women, and I think maybe that's what they decided among themselves, like not to kill her, let them just go. So they just let that three girls go. They told them to run away and go home without turning back and look at us. So the girls just run into the bush and go home.
My. And you all could see this?
Yeah.
So you were sort of in the back of the truck?
Mm-hmm.
Was it a covered truck?
No.
It was not a covered truck.
Yes.
Just an open bed truck, and you were there and you could see all of this.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened next?
And by then we start going with them, some of them with motorcycles, and we were in the like in the middle, and some of them at the back and some on the front. And when we were going in that forest, like we moved like an hour or hour and a half in the forest, like in the middle of the night, it was dark. And when I was sitting in the truck, like they didn't tell us where they're going with us, they just said that the journey was too long. And I don't know, I was just thinking in my mind that what happened if I go with the Boko Haram? I don't know where we're going, and we are now going in the forest while my family are now at home without knowing what is happening with me. And some of the girls decide like to jump out of the truck and find their way to go home. And I just said, okay, I'll jump out too, because I don't know where I'm going. So I decided to jump out, because if I jump out of the truck and die, my parent maybe will have my body and bury it, and they will see me, then to go with them without even seeing my corpse. So, and I said to one of my friend that I'm going to jump out of the truck. And she said, okay, she'll follow me too, because it was dark and there's a little bit distance with we in the middle and those at the back. So if you jump out, you have to run and hide somewhere in the forest so they cannot see you, those at the back. And then if they pass, then you find your way and go home. So, and she said, okay, she'll jump with me. And I jumped down first, and she followed me, and we hide. And when they passed, and we decided to go, but I realized...
Excuse me, I don't have a picture of this yet.
Mm-hmm.
Were you in the very back of the truck?
Yeah.
Okay, so you jumped out onto the road.
Mm-hmm. And run to the forest.
Did you hurt yourself when you hit? I mean, did you fall when you hit the road?
Yeah, I fall down, but I immediately get up to run, because if those at the back like saw me with maybe their light, they would kill me or they would do something.
How far away were they at that time when you jumped out?
It's not that far away, but because, you know, it was dark and it's forest, you know,
mm-hmm.
so they can't see me. So you have to immediately run and hide in the forest.
And how far away was the forest?
It's not that far, because like the road is in the middle of the forest.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you ran into the forest and your friend followed you?
Mm-hmm.
And then what did you do?
And, okay, when they passed, then I realized that she injured her leg. She can't walk. And we didn't even know where we are. We don't know what place is that? And we've never been there before, and she can't walk, and it was dark. So we just said that we should just sit here and spend the rest of the night. So we sit under a tree and spend the rest of the night in the forest. And early in the morning, the day started being looking good, and the light came out, and I decided to go around the forest and look for help. And she was sitting under the tree, and I was going in the forest, and I met a shepherd with his family and the cows and the sheep in the forest.
How far away were they?
It's not that far, like maybe 1 mile away.
So it didn't take you long to get to the shepherd's house?
No.
What did you say to the shepherd?
Okay, I went there and I met his wife first, and I was talking to her. She said she can't hear the language I'm speaking. Yeah, because, you know, some of them live in the forest, so they're not used to speak the Hausa, so they speak their different language. So, and her husband heard her talking to someone, so he just came out. And I said hi to him, and he can understand me. And I told him what happened, and he said, okay. And I told him if there's any help that he can do, because we didn't even know where we are, like how can we get our way home, or how can he help us and help my friend that injured her leg, she can't walk. And he said he can't help us. The only help he can do for us is that we should not follow the main road. We should just go through the bush, like through the forest, and find our way and go home. He said if you follow this direction, you will go and find yourself in some village, and maybe you'll find help there. And I told him that she can't walk. If she can walk, we can go and find our way, but she can't walk then. And he's the only help that we made in this forest. So he should please help us and, you know, do whatever he can to see if he can help us. And after then, he decided to help us. I tried and convinced him. And he took my friend on his bicycle, and he's driving the bicycle. I was just following them, and we went to a village called Gaglam. And at that village, we met a man with motorcycle that took me and my friend on his motorcycle and took us back to Chibok.
My goodness. But before we leave that, though, you said you were in deep forest there.
Mm-hmm.
So did he bring his bicycle through the forest?
They have like a little house in the forest that mm-hmm. they use. So they use the bicycles, and they use their donkeys, and, you know, to, because they didn't stay in one place, they would just make a little tent here, and tomorrow they would leave this place and go over there. Like, they're just going around.
They were nomadic.
Yeah.
Okay. So he had a bicycle,
mm-hmm.
and what, did he just walk it back through the forest with you until you found your friend again?
Yeah, like, there's a main road, but that road, you know, it's not anybody that was following the main road, because it's in the middle of that forest. So that's the way that we came through with the Boko Haram people.
Mm-hmm.
So that is that road that we still followed, because he has the bicycle. We have to follow that road.
That road. So you went back on the main road on the bicycle.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now I understand.
Yeah. So.
And you got to the small village,
mm-hmm.
and the man with the motorcycle now takes
yeah.
over
mm-hmm.
and helps you.
Yes.
And did you all three ride on his motorcycle at the
mm-hmm.
same time?
Yeah.
That must have been a bit of an adventure.
Mm-hmm. I know.
And how far was that?
It was like, you know, we moved like out of the Chibok. We entered a village, and from there, like, we moved an hour and a half. So it's like maybe an hour or 45 minutes to Chibok.
And then what happened?
And then from there, because our family are not in Chibok, so we have to find our way and go to our village where we stayed. So, and there...
But you said you had a relative in Chibok.
Yes.
Did you go to her house first?
No.
You didn't?
I didn't. I have to, you know, go home, because I'm trying to see if my friend can get help immediately with her legs. And
oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Were you able to find a doctor?
And
or?
Some people in Chibok town run away because of what happened in that night.
Right.
So I'm not sure if I can find her or she's still at home. But when we entered Chibok, like, people just came to the school and were looking for what happened, and the girls are not there, like, parents are crying. And when we entered Chibok and people are saying, where are the other girls? We said, we don't know. We just jumped out and we didn't meet any other people. Like, the other girls jumped out too, but it's only two of us that came together. But the others just, you know, go to the other way and find their help maybe somewhere else. So,
were you the first people to tell them in the village what had happened?
Yes.
There were parents there wondering where their daughters were, yeah. And then you show up and you're from the school, and so I'm sure they wanted to hear from you what had happened.
Yes.
So you had to tell them everything you've told us so far.
Yeah. So we told them what happened, and we tried to see if we can go home. So, like, they asked, where are you guys from? And we told them, and so a man still with a motorcycle is the one that helped and took me and her on a motorcycle and drive us back home to our village, like an hour and a half from Chibok.
You're listening to your weekly Constitutional. I'm Stuart Harris, and I'm speaking with a young lady I call Jane. That's the pseudonym. She's actually a young woman who was kidnapped as a teenager by a group called Boko Haram in northeastern Nigeria. But Jane, I'm happy to say, escaped and is now sharing her story with me. After the break, we'll finish our discussion with Jane. Stick around.
You're a target. If you're a Christian, you're a target. They slaughter people like animals.
Your wife, she
captured by Boko Haram.
So this is literally where Boko Haram started.
Yes. Most of these young men ended up killing their parents.
This Nigeria-based terrorist group is using fear and violence in its bid to establish an Islamic caliphate and eliminate Western influence.
It's been 3 months since the girls were kidnapped, and in those 90 days, the Nigerian government appears to be no closer to finding them.
The global social media campaign to bring the over 200 schoolgirls safely back home has been met with scorn and derision in this new video rant from Boko Haram leader Abu Bakr Shekau.
Bring back our girl. Oh, bring back our army. Bring back our army. Jonathan! Jonathan! Girl, Christian! Bring back our army.
Bring back our army refers to Boko Haram's demand for a prisoner swap in exchange for the kidnapped girls. Jonathan is Nigeria's president. Good luck, Jonathan, whose government has so far failed to secure the safe return of the...
With an official name that translates roughly to people committed to the Prophet's teachings for propagation and jihad, Boko Haram is a militant, extremist Islamic group grounded primarily in the northeastern region of Nigeria, with their presence also felt in Chad, Niger, and Cameroon. Locals bestowed the nickname Boko Haram on them, and it loosely translates to Western education is forbidden. Founded in 2002, with the aim of building an Islamic State, the group was fairly low-key until 2009, when it became more militant and more violent, roughly around the time its founder, Muhammad Yusuf, was
the
executed by
Nigerian police.
The
fate of the 200 schoolgirls remains essentially unknown. The new president of Nigeria essentially acknowledged that it's going to be very, very difficult to bring back the Chibok schoolgirls.
And now it's time to finish our discussion with a young woman I'm calling Jane, one of the few, fortunate few, to have escaped from Boko Haram. So far in the story, Jane's told us about her kidnapping, about her escape, and now she's on the verge of returning to her own village.
And then when I get home, my family heard what happened, that the Boko Haram came to Chibok and took all the schoolgirls and go with them. Like, my mom was crying, my sister-in-laws, my brothers were worrying what happened. They can't call me on my cell phone. We can't talk with them. So, like, my parents were crying, some of the relatives, some of the friends friends came over to my house, so I have to go and drop my friend at her house before coming home because
Let's not skip over that. Let's talk about your friend's house first then. So you brought her home, and I imagine her family was also pretty upset.
Yeah.
So what was that like?
Okay, when we went to her house, her mom and her sister are at home, and her mom was crying too. And so when she saw us, and her mom just get up and hug us, and she's crying, and you know, we just help her and take her off the motorcycle. And I told her what happened, that she injured her leg. They should try and see if they can take her to a doctor and check. And I just left when I told them what happened. So I just left and said, I'm going home because I know my family are worrying too.
Sure. Now, before we leave this, you have been helped by one man with a bicycle and two different men with motorcycles.
Yes.
Do you know any of their names?
I don't know. They just help us.
Well, thank heaven for those fellows, and a shout out to those guys for helping you, and even though we don't know their names.
Yeah.
All right. So now the fellow with the motorcycle, did he give you a ride over to your house?
Yes.
He went above and beyond.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So now you ride up on the back of his motorcycle.
Mm-hmm. And went to my house, and my family and some of the friends, our neighbors, are at my house and crying. But when they saw me, they're still crying too, but you know, they're happy I'm back. So, and I told them what happened, and I said that the other girls, we don't know what happened to them, but let's just pray for them that they should find a way and escape too. So that's what I told my family, and people keep coming, like asking what happened, and I told them, and by then I was just together with my family in Askira, and hopefully keep praying for the other girls that were not here too, and that they should find a way and escape too.
Did anyone from the government show up to investigate what was going on or to help you? Any police officers or anybody from the army or?
Mm-mm. Like, since when that happened, like, nobody, especially from the police, whatever, to come and ask me. It's just like the neighbor that came and asked what happened, and I'll tell them what happened. So by then, like one week after, the governor of Borno State said that he wants the girls that escaped to come over to Maiduguri, which is somewhere in like 2 hours or 3 hours drive from my village to his place. So, and going in that road to is risky, but he said he provide a military to guide us to go to his house. So, and
why did he want you to come to his house?
He just want to find out what happened, and he's trying maybe to protect us from maybe the attack again. I don't know. But by then, because I was scared, I don't want to go. I was crying, telling my dad that I'm not going anywhere. I'll just stay at home. If the Boko Haram come and kill me here, then it's okay. But I just don't want to go anywhere. But the people said that just go. You don't know what is going to happen. And he's trying to protect you girls. And we just go over to his house and stay there like almost a week. He kept us in a place like nobody knows where we are, and they have the securities, and they cook food and bring the food. We just stayed there like for a week. But every day I was crying, thinking that maybe they just keep us there and they'll bring the Boko Haram to come and took us again. Since
really?
We
you
are
thought
the
maybe
who escaped, that's what I'm thinking.
Right.
Because I was so scared of what happened. I escaped from their hands, and I don't want to be in their hands again. Like, I was so scared. So every day,
I'm just having trouble getting my mind around this because, of course, I've not been to Nigeria.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds as if, at least in your village, there wasn't really any government.
No.
And there was no one there from the government to help you, and they didn't send anybody to help you.
Yeah.
All they did was tell you to come to them, and then when you went to them 2 hours away in a dangerous trip, they locked you away in a room as if you were a prisoner.
Yeah, like nobody's allowed to come in except those, the government people. And
what did they say to you?
They just tell us that we are here, we brought you here to protect you. Like, nobody is allowed to come here, so you guys are safe here. They have just securities around the house, like guiding us. Even if we like step out of the room, they'll just tell us, go in. The securities will just, you know, tell us to go in and stay.
And how many of you were there? How many girls?
We are 27.
So 27 girls had escaped.
57 escaped, but some other people, like maybe they didn't get information to go over to the governor's house or something like that. So it's just 27 that went to his house.
So 57 girls jumped off the truck or otherwise got out, and 27 of them
went to this governor's house.
Okay. Yeah. You're there a week. What happens next?
I was there, like, every day called my dad and told him. I was crying, and he said, but I can't help, like, he have no right to come and say that he wanted to take his daughter among the other stuff. So he said, I have to be patient. And by then, he said that he would took us to school and find a school for us, a safety school, a good school, and, you know, so that we can go to school again. And we said, okay, but we want to go home. But he said, like he said, he would just took us directly from there and take us to school and put us in school somewhere. And we said, we don't want to do that. We want to go and say bye to our family before. That's what we said. We were crying. And he said, okay. And he sent us back home. And he said, if he is ready to take us to school, then he will call all of us to come. And we said, okay. And when we went home, and I said, even if he called that he's going to take us to school, I'm not going to school anymore, like, because I'm so scared. So I just stayed with my family, like, for a while with them at home.
Well, it certainly seems that if you're a girl, going to school simply puts you in a target area. So I could certainly understand why you wouldn't want to go back to school.
Yeah.
So what happened then? You're back at home?
Mm-hmm.
How long were you at home?
Okay, since April till June, I was at home. So, and...
Did anybody bother you? Did Boko Haram show up again?
No. It's just like people keep telling my dad that I escaped from the hands of Boko Haram. Why did he allow me to sit at home with them in that village again? Why can't he send me away, like, to stay with maybe my relatives, some that are in Abuja, in other places that no one knows, so that I should be safe over there? And my dad said, no, I'm going to stay in his house. If the Boko Haram came and kill us in the house, then let them just come. Because they keep releasing videos saying that if they find out about we that escaped from their hands, they will kill us and our family.
So Boko Haram is releasing videos threatening you.
Yeah.
Well, I can see how you'd be concerned about that. So a couple of months go by. It's June of this year. Excuse me, of 2014.
Yes.
Then what happens?
Okay, June of 2014, a man from the United States, he's from Nigeria, original from Nigeria, but he stayed here. He worked here. He's a human rights lawyer. His name is Emmanuel Ogebe. He went to Nigeria to find out what happened. Like, people heard what happened, but he wanted to find a detail about what happened. So he went to Abuja and met my friend that injured her leg. And when he met her, and she told him her story about how we escaped, how the things happened, and he asked her if maybe any people tried to ask her and help her, especially like securities or the newspaper people, and she said nobody. And he said, okay, how about school? And she said, nobody. The governor said that he's going to take us to school, but we didn't hear anything yet from him. And he said, okay. And when he come back to the United States, he went to Nigeria with a congressman. So when they come back and telling people that they found a girl that told them what happened in Israel, so they said they got a scholarship for her to come and study here. So, and she told him that if he is going to find a scholarship for her to come here, he has to find two, because I'm the one who helped her in the forest with her legs, and she can't go to school without me. So, and when she told me about it, and she said, we'll go to the United States and study, I said, I'm not going to school. I said, I'm not going to school, because I was so, so scared. And I said, maybe if the Boko Haram heard about it, they would still go to the United States and get me. So I don't want to go.
You were frightened even to come to the United States to go to school.
Yeah. I said, if I go to the United States, my family are here in Nigeria, and the Boko Haram issue is still going. So what if they kill my family and I was there? I just don't want to go to school. Like, I don't want to hurt anything about going to school again. I just want to stay with my family. If they came and kill us with our family, then that's the end of it. But I just don't want to go to school.
If I understood you correctly, the offer was for two girls to come with scholarships, and this was offered through the human rights lawyer. His name is Emmanuel. What's his last name?
Ogebe.
Emmanuel Ogebe.
Yes.
And he was there with the United States congressman as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, congressmen do that from time to time. They go on what they call fact-finding missions.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the congressman's name?
I can't remember.
So the offer's on the table. Mm-hmm. All you have to do is say, yes, I'll go with you, and the two of you can come to the United States.
Yes.
You don't want to come. Perfectly understandable.
Yeah.
So what happened next?
When I said I don't want to come, so he got the admission even more than two. So, and he asked if the other girls from Chibok can come over and see him when he come to Nigeria the second time. So they just continue with the process of just coming to school here. And I said, I don't want to, so I just forget about it. I just don't want to do it. And by then, after they finished their visa, international passport, and saying that they want to come here, and my friend was always crying, saying that I want you to come with me. And, you know, she tried and convinced me. And I was telling my parent about it. And my dad said, I will not force you to do what you don't want to do, but it's your choice. If you want to go, then you can go. And when I told my brothers, and they said, school is important. To be educated is good. And everywhere you go, you can die. If God says you're going to die in the United States, you'll die. If God says you die here, then you'll die here. But don't be scared and just have faith in God. Believe in God. If you go over there, God will be with you and protect you. Everything will be fine. And they tried and said, I should just go. And I said, okay.
Do you think you'd like to go back to Nigeria eventually? Or are you starting?
I can stay. I can go back. Whenever I feel like I want to go, I can go. But I just feel like to stay here and do whatever I can to see, to help people in Nigeria too.
Wow. That's our show today. Thanks so very much to Jane, the young woman I've been speaking to, who's been sharing her experience being kidnapped and escaping from Boko Haram. We're very happy that you're safe and that you're with us, Jane. Thanks so much to Wanda, her mentor and teacher, who sat in on the interview. And thanks so very much to the institution, which has taken in Jane and other girls who've escaped from Boko Haram. I'm not mentioning an institution today, though I'd love to give them credit for all of their good work. But for safety's sake and to protect Jane and her family and the institution, we've decided to be a little circumspect today. Our executive producer is Wayne Winkler. Our scheduler is Carol Hutchinson. Our distribution engineer is Chad Barrett. Our music is by the Fifes and Drums of Colonial Williamsburg. Our Madison Minute is by Jen Patia Howell. My name is Stuart Harris. And if you're lucky enough to live in a country that has religious freedom, you're pretty darn lucky.